celebrities, athletes, musicians, influencers, CEOs, entrepreneurs, business owners, experts, politicians, and philanthropists. Welcome to Interviews with Arizonans. Thought-provoking and revealing conversations with Arizona's most interesting and influential people. With your host, founder of Phoenix Homes and Hotspots and Alpha Whale Productions, Todd S. Hall. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to podcast.
So I remember somebody told me several years ago, they said, give your parents a break. They weren't talking to me specifically, but I remember somebody saying, give your parents a break, right? You get one chance to do it. You learn on the fly. There are no do-overs. And so I heard that. And then as I was reading kind of the introduction section of your book, I saw something similar to that. So I thought that was really interesting in terms of just how you led into the book with that.
Yeah, well, I agree with that to a certain point. And I think I was living like that. So my firstborn were triplet sons, and then I had a daughter 18 months later. So in 18 months, I went from zero to four kids. And so I was just reacting my way through motherhood, as many of us do, right? We jump in and we start having kids and we just start reacting our way through it. And I think that's the whole point of my book. And yes, we need to go easy on ourselves, but we also need to understand that we get one shot. We have 18 years. And what do we want to do and accomplish and teach in those 18 years? And while going easy on ourselves, I mean,
yeah,
because people can take that and go, oh no, I want to do this perfectly, which is there's no such thing.
Right, right.
But that's why I wrote Parent on Purpose. What does that mean for you, right? What does that mean for me?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the book. Before we do that, let's first of all bring everybody into the conversation. So everybody, welcome back. Today's conversation is really important, especially if you're a parent. Make sure you stick around till the end of this conversation because there's a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about your book, Parent on Purpose, which is a real, I mean, you know, there's so many resources out there. So it's, and I don't know that there's just that one perfect source. My wife reads just tons of books on parenting, always trying to understand how to be better. But we're going to talk about your book, and we're going to talk about some recent events here in Scottsdale specifically. And I don't know if this is something that's happening in other areas, and I'm not sure if you know, but we're going to find out today. So welcome Amy Carney to the conversation.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So let's just start with that. Like, who are you? Right? Like, who? I know there's a lot. And by the way, I know there's a lot of people in the community that know who you are. Right? You're very active in the community. Like I said, you have the book. But for the people that don't know who you are, give us just a little bit of insight into who you are and what your involvement is here in the community.
Okay, perfect. Well, yep. I'm Amy Carney, and I've been married to my husband Keith for 23 years. He was an NHL hockey player for 18 years. So he retired, I don't know, like 10 years ago. And we moved back here to Arizona. So he played for the Coyotes, which is how we ended up here back in 1998 when we got married. And then we had the four kids I told you about and moved all around. And then we adopted two sons out of the foster care system. One most recently in August of this year. Who is 10, and then we adopted 6 years ago a 9-year-old boy. So now, So I'm a big advocate of children, of family, and our community. So I'm a former journalist, freelance writer now, written a couple books, and I'm just passionate about everything family, children, and community.
Let me tell you about Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. This is my real estate YouTube channel, and it's the number one real estate resource here in the state of Arizona, and here's why. Let's say you want to put your home on the market, and you contact a real estate agent. Most agents are going to do a pretty good job of marketing the home. The challenge is that's where it stops. Phoenix Homes and Hotspots picks up where the average agent left off. We not only do a phenomenal job marketing the home, but we're going to show through video on our YouTube channel, we're going to show the surrounding community, walking trails, community pools, bike paths, golf courses, whatever that might look like running through the community. But then we're also going to show the lifestyle around it. We're going to show all the local hotspots. Where are the best restaurants? Where's the best shopping? Where are you going to get groceries, gas? Where are the best schools located, and how are they rated near that particular community where you found the home you're looking for? So if you think of yourself as an out-of-state buyer moving into the area, they find your home online, they love the home, but they have no idea what the community or the hotspots or the lifestyle around that looks like, we tie it all together. No gimmicks. No, sell your home in X amount of hours. No, we have tens of thousands of buyers waiting to buy your home. This is not gimmicks. This is bulletproof real estate marketing. Also on Phoenix Homes and Hotspots, we talk about the cost of living in the area, pros and cons, and so much more. If you're watching this podcast on YouTube right now, click the top right-hand corner. That will take you to Phoenix Homes and Hotspots to check it out. Or if you're listening on one of the audio platforms, you can look in the description below, or you can go to youtube.com/Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. Check it out. Subscribe. Smash the bell next to the subscribe button. That way we can notify you every time we create new popular videos right there on Phoenix Homes and Hotspots.
You're listening to Interviews with Arizonans, an original Todd S. Hall Alpha Whale production. Now, back to the show.
So do you have one of those big, like, I know some of your, like, most of your kids now are in college, but before that, did you have, like, one of those big, National Lampoon station wagons or something to haul all these kids around?
I know. We should have. We just had a Suburban, and I couldn't wait. That was kind of my gift when the triplets went off to college, was we could downsize. So now I've got just we can't fit in one car anymore. So
you had triplets and decided to have more, which is impressive in itself.
Does this ever all work out how you think it's going to work out? None of this has been my plan, but it's been a good plan.
And then adopted two. Okay.
And then adopted two. And hopefully the end is six children. Hopefully that's it.
Yeah. So let's talk about your book. First of all, when did you decide to write this, and what inspired you to write it?
Well, my book came out in 2019, and it stems from a trip that we took, an RV trip around the entire U.S. in 2016. So we had pulled our kids out of school, the four kids out of school. My husband was coaching with Chicago Blackhawks at the time. He was never around. We had just reacted our way through raising our kids up until this point. Our kids were going into sixth and seventh grade. And I looked at my husband one day and I was like, what are we doing? And we just race around. We're missing it, you know? And if we don't make a change now, I'm going to get to the end of this and have so much regret. And he agreed, and he quit his job. We bought an RV. We had never camped in our lives. And we just went around the U.S. for 7 months. And so we wanted to regroup, kind of pour into our kids and our family before they became teenagers. And we knew it was going to be our time to start launching them. And so my book, I started out writing about that trip and telling everyone where to go in South Dakota and all the amazing things we saw. And then it evolved into this book about why we took that trip, and how we as parents today are reacting our way through raising our kids based on a lot of cultural expectations. And we don't even realize it, right? We sign them up for soccer when they're six because it's cute, right? And it's fun and it's good for them. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, your entire family revolves around this travel soccer team that they got on, you know, and we don't even realize what we're doing. We're just on a hamster wheel. And then we get to the end and I see so many moms, dads even, that are just sad that they missed it. You know, back to what you said in the beginning, we get one shot. So we want to be proactive. We want to be purposeful about how we're raising our kids and how we're, setting up our family culture. So that's what the book's about.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting. One of the things that I read was, we're not raising kids, we're raising adults.
Right.
And that's an interesting, when you really break that down and start to just wrap your mind around that and think about it, it's absolutely true, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you want them to have their childhood, but at the same time, you know, I'm just thinking to my situation. So I have a 4 and a 6-year-old, right? 4-year-old son and 6-year-old daughter. I'm thinking about my situation. I mean, how many times do you have to reinforce please and thank you until it becomes the norm?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, years, literally years. Mm-hmm. And still to this day, sometimes you're like, okay, please. Especially when they're with other people, but all the time. It's a constant reinforcement. So you want them to be kids that you're conscious about, you know, what does the big picture look like? And so one of your inspirations for writing it was the fact, obviously, you have a large family. Is that mm-hmm. was that pretty much the entire inspiration for writing the book?
Well, no, not necessarily, because even like you, your kids are close in age a little bit. And so you're going to be moving through just similar to me. You're going to lose your kids within 2 years, probably most likely. They're going to leave your home. And so I knew I was going to lose all four of my kids at one time, basically 1 year. I was going to lose all four of them to adulthood, which is the way it should be, right? That's what we want. But what I want that to look like. And I knew if I didn't start becoming more purposeful and proactive, that I would be that mom that would fall apart. Because, you know, that's a lot on anyone when you, an empty nest is a lot. And so I just wanted to enjoy raising them. You know, I really wanted to, but one of my main things that I realized we're not doing as a society is raising the adults. And I wanted my kids off. Right now they're in four different states, four different colleges, and they are capable. You know, I don't want them going away and feeling that, you know, not confident in themselves to make decisions, good or bad. I know that my mom did that for me, and most of our parents did do that for us. They let us fail. They let us make mistakes. They let us make decisions that weren't the best for us, and we're better off for it. And so I kind of just, I look at it, it's more old school parenting maybe, but with new school family, stronger family relationships.
Yeah. Something you said resonated with me. So I just started coaching soccer for my kids. And
I didn't even know that.
I never even played soccer, right? So I was like, I don't want to coach soccer. I signed up, you know, so I went through the process of, you know, the background check and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, I want to coach baseball and basketball and maybe flag football. Soccer was not on my radar at all. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long story short, I started coaching soccer. And one of the things that I realized, and then I had some assistant coaches that started working with me. My first season, I realized that their capacity, these kids, even at 4 and 6, especially 6 and 6-year-old girls are really, really sharp. Mm-hmm. And I learned that quickly. And I pushed them, right? Because I realized that their capacity is way, way more than what people give them credit for. So by the end of the season, we're running plays, we're getting in passing lanes, we're passing to score, where other teams are kind of going through the motions, but they're playing on athletic ability. And we're playing not just on athletic ability, but we're really, you know, and it was just that recognition that their capacity is far, far greater than as adults we actually give them credit for. Mm-hmm. And so some of the other coaches, you know, mid-season, I said, okay, watch, this one is about to break out. It's about to happen. 2 weeks later, it happens. They're like, I can't believe it, you know? And so really amazing. But I like that. I mean, I think that that's something that we really, I think as adults, we just don't give these kids credit for what they're really capable of.
For sure. For sure. And I think that, I mean, you can use that analogy you just talked about throughout life and our family and pushing our kids to, you know, knowing our kids enough what they're capable of and pushing them to be uncomfortable a little bit, right? Or pushing them further than they think themselves. I think it's huge. And I think that we're not doing a great job with that.
Yeah. So back in 2012, I started this, it was a website, basically. It was kind of a small business idea website. It was called Prodigy 21. And it was basically teaching kids financial literacy in 21 days.
Oh, I love it.
Meaning 21 days to create a habit. And, you know, for me, one of the things when it comes to schools that's always driven me crazy is why are we not teaching real world financial literacy? These kids are, you know, they're going through 18 years. I mean, I started working as a janitor. I grew up in Seattle. My parents hired me as a janitor at the Greyhound bus station in downtown Seattle. Now imagine how filthy, right? At 13 years old, and I made my money so I could go buy baseball cards and stuff, right? But I learned how to go out and work at an early age. And so, you know, my pet peeve has always been, why are we not teaching kids financial literacy in school? And so I started this website, and what I quickly realized by going out and talking to parents is the parents love the idea. But they're like, yeah, I don't think my kids are going to do this. That was the feedback. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. Who's running the show, right? Like, what is going on in today's world? Because it's different than, I'm sure, when you and I grew up. You know, it's a different world, not just from the kids, but I mean, the parents are involved in this, right? Like, the parents have plenty of responsibility with what's actually happening today versus how you and I probably, how I grew up for sure, and guessing probably you grew up, right? So anyway, I started this and realized, so my question is this, what our parents, and maybe I'm not even phrasing it right, you know, I mean, but what are parents doing wrong today? What is, you know, again, this is something that you've really kind of, you know, taken upon yourself mm-hmm. to not perfect necessarily, but to really do your best to get it right. And so what are parents getting wrong today? What do parents need to do differently?
Well, I think it's that. It's looking at what made you into the man that you are today, right? That and what made me into the woman that I am today. I was at work at 15 at Burger King, right? That's what we did back then. And our parents weren't giving us everything. And now, you know, today we have our kids and we want to give them better. And in certain ways, we do want to give them relationally better, probably, than maybe what a lot of us had. But we forget that how important going to work early is and learning to manage money and all these skills. I have my whole section of my book is exactly about that. And I've had, you know, I have the same thing. Parents will say, well, they don't want to. Why are we asking our kids if they want to go to work, if they want? So I talk about in my book a lot about, okay, you know, work is important, right? Your kids are only 4 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like? 15, 16, when would you think they want to go to work? And so that's what my husband and I did. And we said at 15, we had told them all, they all knew they were going to get jobs. Now, if they couldn't, you know, because a couple of them were traveling sports athletes, gets hard to have a job in the community, but you can, the beautiful thing about culture today is you can be an entrepreneur. I mean, there's online businesses. And so all of my kids, that's a requirement kind of in our family. You go to work when you're 15, and whether that's in the community, you start an eBay business. How can you start making money? My 10-year-old that we just adopted, we're already thinking of, he wants to do a trash can business where he can make money of pulling, you know, pushing down trash cans for people and pulling them back up. You want to start your kids thinking about how can you earn money and then teaching them the skills. I love what you're doing. I want that. I mean, I just did that during COVID. My 18-year-olds were home their senior year, unfortunately, but I bought a Dave Ramsey, you know, a financial literacy course and made them. We all sat down and, you know, I had to sit with them because they probably would not. They'd been staring at their phones and not paying attention. But it's so important. So my whole first section of the book is lead on purpose.
Yeah.
It's we've got to understand that it doesn't matter what our child feels like doing, right? If we know it's good for them, if we know it's a skill that's going to serve them well in life, why wouldn't we make sure we're giving that to them?
Yeah, I know that you said the lead on purpose is kind of just a core foundation for so many different things. So we're going to talk about that in a second. But yeah, you're absolutely right. So my daughter is the type of person, she's the 6-year-old, right? And Aviana, she likes everything that we put her in, soccer, baseball, basketball, sports camp, loves learning, loves reading and writing, and just she's just absorbs everything. She likes jujitsu. Doesn't love jujitsu, likes jujitsu. So we have her in a bully-proof, you know, it's called bully-proof mm-hmm. through jujitsu, or, you know, through a jujitsu studio. And she fights me on it because now she's in aftercare at her school and she wants to hang out with her friends and wants to do projects and all that stuff. And I was like, okay, Tuesday is jujitsu day. So I pick her up and sometimes she's cool and sometimes she's like, I don't want to do jujitsu. I want to stay here with my friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my wife and I have a conversation. Like, she loves everything. And I was like, you know, this is just one of those things. This is probably the most important thing she's doing out of all of her extra activities because she's learning to defend herself. She's learning to be, she's also learning to be a great human being because they don't just teach self-defense. They teach them how to be great little people at home, helpers. And they teach them so much. I'm like, this is probably the one thing that's just not negotiable. Like, you know, because my wife has said several times, like, you know, she just doesn't love it. Should we keep her in? I'm like, yeah, this is the thing that's a non-negotiable for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. if she was crying every time in, that might be different. But that's not the case. Once she's there, she's having fun. She likes it, doesn't love it like the other stuff. So yeah, that's one of those things where it's like, you know what? We're the parents and this is really important for her development, not just in self-defense, but to being a great human being growing up, you know, and so.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And like you said, and too often we are like, well, if our kids don't love it, then they don't have to do it. We get caught up in that. And that's not the case. I think what you hit on is so key to our parenting is if you know that is something that's going to teach her the skills and the values that you want your children to have, then that's what matters, right? It's not if they're loving it in that moment, but that could be the thing later she'll thank you for, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So tell me more about that chapter. So I know, again, mm-hmm. that's a really important core foundation, again, not just for the book, and we'll talk about a few of the other chapters that I really thought were interesting as well, but you said, hey, look, this is not just a core foundation for the book or raising kids, but for life, business, Mm-hmm. How do you tie all that together? I mean, through that one chapter, what's the, and you've talked a little bit about the lesson out of it, but kind of tie it all together so people have an understanding.
Well, it's actually, my book is broken down into three parts. So the first part is lead on purpose.
Okay.
The second part, is love on purpose. And the third is launch on purpose. So that's kind of why I hauled this Jenga game here too, because this is what I wrote my book based on. Like, nobody really knows that. But the Jenga game is 18 layers. And so I look at this as a visual for raising our kids, right? And so the first layer, your first 6 years of raising your kids, you're kind of setting the foundation. You're figuring out what's important. You know, like you said, saying thank you is important. So over and over and over, you're reiterating what's important. Mm-hmm. Who is your family? What is important to you? That's the lead on purpose. And that's where we as parents need to understand who we are, what's important to us. And, you know, and it's different for each spouse, which can get tricky, right?
Yeah.
Because we grew up in different homes and have different
values. Right.
But what is core to both of you? What's important to both of you? And how do you want to teach that? And how do you want to live that out? And I think that's true in our life, whether we're parenting, in our business, in the community, right? We've got to know what our values are and how we are going to live those out. And that's just kind of the lead on purpose.
Yeah. And so let me tell everybody that's listening on one of the audio platforms that that if you go over to the YouTube version, you can see kind of what we're doing here, right? So we have the, so again, for those that listen on Spotify or, you know, Google or wherever you're listening, Apple, go over to YouTube Interviews with Arizonans and you can see that. Okay. So I thought there were a couple chapters. You know, I've kind of parented, I have kind of one core philosophy. This is my parenting philosophy that's worked really well to this point. And I know I probably need to build some more blocks, some more Jenga blocks on top of it. But my philosophy has been, or maybe the question to myself has been, how do I get my children to respect me but adore me? You know, like,
I love that.
How do you make those two things happen? And the answer has been to make sure that the discipline aspect is there, but mm-hmm. the circle back happens quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that you're going to your room because of this, but 5 minutes later, we're circling back and we're talking about it. And I've found that to be just a really great equation. And again, it's just one thing, but it's worked really well. Now, my kids are 4 and 6. I don't know if that's going to work when they're teenagers. I mean, I don't know. But to this point, I think it's served us well. And my wife is very similar in that regard. I mean, I guess we've talked about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the claim your authority, I mean, so when I saw claim your authority, that was what I thought of, right? Mm-hmm. It's like claim your authority, but again, doing it in a way where you keep that love and you keep that affection and that what I call, you know, adoring or adoration or whatever. So tell us more about the claim your authority chapter and what's that all about?
Yeah, well, I talk about an exercise that I do, and I developed even a little workbook on writing your parenting purpose statement. Because sometimes, like I said, we don't even know why we're doing what we're doing or what values are really even important to us. So when we can take the time to kind of jot that down and then figure out how we're going to live that out, it only helps our kids because we're able to communicate about this. I mean, I love what you just said. That's going to work for you throughout life because that's what every kid needs. Every kid needs structure. They need discipline. That is our role as a parent, right?
Yeah.
And they also need the fun and the love and the entertainment. So when we're combining those, that's what is the best outcome, I think. I mean, and like I said, you will see that will serve you well. And you making hard decisions for your kids when they're younger and saying, no, this, you know, what I don't even know how to say jiu-jitsu because my kids, is that right? is important because of this. You know, these values are important to our family. This is teaching you this. And so when we communicate with our kids why we're making decisions and not wavering, it's not that you get to make the choice. This is why we're doing it. They settle in a little bit. And you'll find that as teenagers, I think, that when they're used to you doing that, when they're not going on the party bus with friends or whatever, they're not going on this sleepover, whatever decisions you make, they more settle in because they trust you, right? They trust that they may be unhappy about it.
Yeah.
They might be unhappy about your choices, but they also will feel loved by them because you're willing. You're willing to, you know, make some hard choices for them that's in their best interest for today. And then you're going to love on them, you know, through it.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing that I've found from my son, who's 4 and hot, sweet, 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 but gets hot really fast, right? And so the other cool thing that I found out of all of that with him is now a lot of times if he's in trouble, he's going to stomp and get all upset and go to his room, but typically he'll circle back to me faster than I'll circle back to him. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Daddy. You know, it's like, okay, let's go. Let's move on. Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
Giving them space to figure out family, right? And relationships and knowing that you'll always be there for them, but yet you're not going to cater to them throughout their life because it's not helping them either.
So. Yeah. As adults, especially parents, right? Married parent with a business, which, you know, a lot of people that listen to this podcast are business owners, mm-hmm. right? And so that combination is a very tricky combination, right? You're just always busy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we feel this obligation that we always have to be connected, right? And so you have a chapter called Disconnect to Reconnect. Mm-hmm. Tell me more.
Well, this is good. See, this is good because your kids are young, so they're not consuming my screens yet.
A little bit
turns into a lot bit.
Yeah.
If you let it. And I think that's the key is creating boundaries in our homes for our family around screens. And that's all it means is it's really hard to connect with our kids because, like you said, we're busy. So when we gathering on the family table is big for me. Because we don't, you know, we're busy through the day. And so no technology at the table, no technology in bedrooms, whatever, in the car even. I would say to my, you know, my 18-year-old, if you're sitting up front here with me, or, you know, there's no, we're going to talk. We're not going to have phones. So it's just setting up boundaries on technology that will soon consume your kids and can consume your family. And then everyone's just sitting on screens, which feels fine because we're getting work done.
Yeah.
They're entertained. But you'll see quickly, it's so important to figure that out now. What does that look like? I talk about in my book about parenting 6 years ahead. So that's 12 years old, right? What are 12-year-olds have phones today?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that look like? So you got to start thinking about that now and having those conversations with your wife. So that way you start talking about it early, like when in your family. So that way when they get to that point, it's just normal. It's just natural. My college kids are like, this is strange. People bring, you know, on their phones the whole time during meals. It's just because they didn't grow up with that. So it's creating boundaries around technology is what that chapter is all about.
Yeah. And so what does that look like? I mean, is that like just balance? Obviously at 12, and even sometimes, look, as a parent, sometimes, so I'll give you an example of where I need to have my son on a phone as I'm coaching my daughter's soccer practice. His practice is over because they're in two different leagues, two different age groups. And my wife can't always go to practice. Mm-hmm. And so I have to put him on something, right? So, you know, even at 4, sometimes you just find that need. It's like it serves its purpose because otherwise, now I know where he is, what he's doing, as opposed to whatever. And so it does serve its purpose from time to time. But as it's like you said, now they're 12 years old, you're not going to keep them off phones. All their friends have them. You're not going to keep them off. So what does that actually look like? The disconnect, is that just creating some balance? Like, okay, you get this much time on your – how do you actually create that disconnect?
Well, this is the biggest struggle I think parents are faced with today is this technology and how to figure it out. I wrote up a cell phone contract before our kids got their first phones just to have that communication with them, to talk about boundaries. And I think it's really important is just the communication of this is what we do in our family. Doesn't mean Johnny next door or your cousin. I mean, everyone's doing it differently, but doing it, talking with your kids, this is why we're doing what we're doing. And they're not going to be happy about whatever it is you're doing. They're not going to be happy about it. Come 13 to 18, they're not going to be happy. So get that over with now. Our job is not to make our kids happy, right? It's to think of that adulthood, and we don't want to raise kids who are addicted to video games when they leave our home, and you're not. And I'm worried: are they going to class? Right? Are they going to class at college, or are they sitting home, you know, playing video games? Now they can make that decision on their own, but I know in our house, how we raise them and what we raise them to be important or not, it matters.
Yeah, and the video games is a good one too. I mean, you see so many kids now. I think about it, and I'm like, you know, if you think about you know, if you just think about the world, you think about the United States and China, and you think about how we've been a world leader for so long and how the Chinese are really catching up to us in so many ways with whatever it is, technology, military, whatever that might look like, right? And I think, like, I don't think these Chinese kids are sitting in their parents' basements playing video games all weekend long, right? They're like, you know, they're disciplined, they're strict, and don't get me wrong, I'm not endorsing communism here, right? But I'm just saying that I think that it's just built into their culture, where I think at one point that was built into our culture is that hard work that we talked about earlier. And now it's like, you know what, it's just easier for me to let them go play video games than it is to actually be a parent. And right?
For sure.
So, yeah.
For sure. And there's nothing wrong with having video games as a part of their downtime on the weekend or whatever it is you decide for your family. But as they get older, and you can't blame the kids. I mean, video games are a lot more fun than doing math, right? Or, I mean, so we can't blame the kids. We can blame ourselves for the boundaries we choose.
That's right.
To create or not create. And the work is huge. It's huge. And if they're out working, they don't have time to. And then they get addicted to making money, right? They get addicted to the feelings that come with work, too. You know what I mean? The good feelings. And so video games aren't as interesting anymore because, you know, that's just not getting them where they want to be in life. They're not going to be able to buy whatever it is they want to buy sitting home on video games. So work is my number one, I mean, thing that helps.
Yeah.
And they can start working early. Like my husband was doing an eBay business with them, I think, when they were sixth grade. They were buying shoes and reselling them, and that's how they kind of started making money, and they've been working ever since.
Very cool. Yeah, very cool. One other chapter that I wanted to talk about is, so one other thing that we've kind of done in our family and you know, through conversation with my wife is, like, you know, instead of, with Christmas coming up, right, instead of buying a bunch of material things, let's focus on experiences, right? Because I think, you know, experiences last a lifetime. Those memories last a lifetime. That little toy, I mean, when you have 20 little toys and all the boxes get opened, and we just had this conversation the other day, it's like, you know, all the boxes get opened at the same time and that one toy never gets seen again. It goes in a box, never seen again. So we spend all this money on material things, which I think are important. Obviously, you want your kids to have some stuff, but there comes a point where it's just too much. Mm-hmm. And so why not take that money and create experiences? Go take a trip. Kind of like what you said, right? With the RV idea is amazing. I would love to do it and just go for even 6 months or even just a summer and just go see stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and take the kids to historical places and whatever, and just kind of make it almost a learning field trip at the same time would be amazing.
Yeah.
But, so the chapter, Create Meaningful Traditions, tell us more about that.
Well, the Create Meaningful Traditions probably is more about simple things. I found myself wanting to do everything, right? I mean, you know, especially this time of year, is, you know, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, everything that, you know, families, holidays that we're celebrating. And then I started thinking about, and I started realizing, like, what are we doing that's sustainable in our family? What traditions are something we do over and over and over. So whatever your family's into, right? If you're a road tripper, are you going to try and hit all the different national parks or the ball fields, or what would be authentic to your family? And then have a goal that we had had the goal of 50 states by the time our kids went to college. Well, we got to 48 because COVID happened. It's fun, you know, and then your kids, now that's a travel tradition. So that's kind of different than holidays, but it's creating experiences that are not even just one-offs. It's like something that's part of a bigger, fun family goal is really, really fun too. But create meaningful traditions is, what simple things do you do over and over and over in your family?
What would be some of the examples? Like, what are some of the things that you did in your family that would be something that people could relate to?
Here's a simple little thing that is left, center, right. Do you know the game left, center, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we play that throughout, usually on holidays or on vacation, because it's an easy thing you can throw in the bag. And we've always played that. And so when the kids are home for Thanksgiving, we got out. Now we play with money, right? When they're older, now it comes with money, and it gets way more exciting as teenagers. And so that's just left, center, right is part of who the Carney family. That's what we do together.
Very cool.
Simple things like that. What is it, you know, that you do that's going to, you know, when they're often as adults, that they still are going to want to come home and be a part of, because it's what mom and dad have always done. Or it's going camping. Like, we're big KOA campers now because of our RV road trip, I wrote for KOA along the trip. And so now we still make sure we try and get to a KOA once a year, just to keep that tradition going, at the campground, to remind us of what once was for our family.
Yeah. And it kind of relates back to the disconnect to connect, right? Where you have, so we've disconnected some of the electronics and that stuff, and now we're connecting as a family.
Yep.
So they really tie together. I mean,
tie
together really
important.
Well.
Yeah. And that whole middle section is love on purpose is about playing too, because we forget to play. And I am not I wouldn't consider myself a big, playful person, but that was what was missing in our family. We were so busy running everyone to their organized activities. That really get consuming come middle school. And that's all we were doing. There was no time for fishing or, camping and just letting kids be in nature. And even us as adults, just being in nature with nothing and figuring out what in the world we want to do.
Yeah.
Is a really beautiful piece that we're missing in culture today.
Yeah. So how can somebody get the book? I know, let's talk about your website first. I'm sure there's multiple ways. So let's talk about your website. Your book is available on your website.
Yes.
So let's talk about your website real quick.
Okay. So my website is just my name, amycarney.com or parentonpurpose.com as well. And so I've got actually a shop in there because I've got a keepsake product line as well that I just created. And it's obviously on Amazon. I'm a big shop local girl, and so I love Kid Stop Toys, and Scottsdale sells it. Scottsdale Bible Church. There's Grand Project Shop on the west side. So local retailers, O'Bungalow in Scottsdale, a lot sell it.
Okay, good.
But I know we always love to go on Amazon and buy it quickly, but sometimes it's nice to support local. And
so you can get it on Amazon if you wanted a Kindle version, but support local if you can.
You can get it all on Amazon, and then you can buy it off my website.
Yeah. But support local if you can. If you're not looking for the digital version, you want the hard copy, support local.
And I wrote it small on purpose. You can see here it's 130 some pages or whatever. And it was on purpose because I wanted a mom, dad to be able to get on an airplane and be able to read through the whole thing and, in one trip. We're busy. We don't have time to read. Some of the parenting books I would get would be so thick, I couldn't even get through it. And then I feel guilty I'm not getting through the parenting book. And so I feel like there's not a lot of fluff, really fun and great tips that have helped me, help my family. And it's just, I don't know, it's something I'm proud of, and I think it's helpful.
Awesome. And I also noticed on your website, you have some additional, like a section with additional parenting tips and just like blog posts, I guess, just with additional parenting tips on there as well.
I haven't been writing as much on there because I've been consumed with other things, which we're going to get to, I guess. But and social media is a place I try and show up on Instagram or on Facebook. And those handles are Amy L. Carney. And so hopefully I can get back into my writing a little.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. What else could you possibly be consumed with?
Yeah, adopting a 10-year-old.
Yeah. All right. So let's shift gears because there's some important things happening in the state of Arizona that we need to talk about, and that you're obviously, a lot of headlines came out a few weeks ago and you were right in the middle of it, right? And on a good side from a parenting standpoint, but so let's talk. You've decided to run for the school board at the Scottsdale. Your kids are a part of the Scottsdale Unified School District,
correct?
And you've decided to run for the school board. So before we get into kind of what's happening here in Arizona and some of that stuff, let's talk kind of about the school board so that people, for me, I'm still kind of a new parent as it pertains to, so my son's still in preschool. My daughter's first grade, so I've had a little bit of experience, but still probably a little naive to how all of this works. Mm-hmm. So for people that are parents or, maybe younger kids or even maybe they're teenagers and just never really gotten that involved with that side of it, what is the purpose of a school board? Just kind of starting with the basics. What is the function and the purpose?
Okay, and you've got to understand that I'm right there with you. I think as a lot of parents, I never paid much attention to the school board, and that is why we're in the position that we're in a lot of districts today, is because we weren't paying attention. I just trusted, what was going on. I actually couldn't have probably told you one person's name before COVID. So, the purpose of a school board is to be the community's representative in the local schools, and the board is basically responsible for ensuring that the schools are well run and that resources are being used wisely, and that high standards for academic performance are set.
Okay.
So that's kind of what the role of a school board is.
Okay.
And everything that a board member is supposed to be focused on is providing the best education possible for the students in their community.
Okay. So is that their sole discretion? And there's more at play than a school board, because we're talking about teachers unions. And so there's a little bit deeper.
It's way deeper. But a school board is basically to represent the parents, represent the community. And they, you know, they're in charge of a lot of things, but they hire the superintendent, which I never knew before. And so, yeah, there are five members in Arizona. So there's five members on each board.
On each. So Scottsdale Unified is five members.
And your district too. All districts in Arizona. There might be a couple smaller ones. But overall, it's five members. And two seats are coming up in November 2022.
Okay. So these are elected officials.
These are elected officials. Yeah. This is a volunteer position.
It's a volunteer position, but it's elected.
It isn't elected.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So a couple of things I heard you say. You said that stuck out in my mind. You said a lot, but the two things that stuck out of my mind the most was better education. They're responsible kind of just make sure that they have that higher level of education. Mm-hmm. And then you said something about parents. You said basically, you didn't say collaborate with parents.
I said represent
the parents.
Because they're
yes.
elected officials, right? The people in the community, including parents, teachers, whoever's in the community are voting these people in. But what has happened is some very few of us were paying attention in the past to school board elections, right? I mean, you would see names on the ballot, and oh, that one sounds good. But I mean, it just was never really a big deal.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that. So how long is the term?
The term is 4 years.
So 4 year. You're mm-hmm. saying two are coming up next year. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you'll go on the ballot. So when there's a vote for Senate, and so next mm-hmm. year with the vote, mm-hmm. there'll be your name will be on that ballot.
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully, right. Okay,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, I have to have only 400 signatures to get on the ballot. So
that was my next question. So what is the process? You say, hey, you know what? I'm going to get involved. I'm going to be part of the school board. I'm going to run. Is that it? It's just you go out and get 400. So what's that actual process look like?
Yeah. So I get 400 signatures, which you need to get about double because some won't be valid or whatever. So that's it. And then I'm on the ballot, and it's a nonpartisan race. So you can't tell by looking at the names, because politics really should not be part of this in the schools.
Right. Absolutely.
That's the problem we're actually having today. I think
totally agree.
And so it shouldn't matter what politics, but I think values matter. I mean, what our values are and who we're representing in the community matters, but on a ballot, you cannot tell that.
Yeah. So I want to be part of the school board. So where does this piece of paper come that the 400 signature? I'm just hypothetically.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it may not be in my future, because it's everything is possible. Mm-hmm. Anything is on the table when it comes to your kids.
I never saw this coming at all.
Yeah.
Never.
When it comes to your kids, everything is on the table, right? I mean,
right.
So how, if somebody wanted to run for school board, you go to the school district and get
Maricopa County Superintendent.
Okay.
Which I never even knew existed, right? Uh-huh. That's who, you can just do it all online. I mean, you can go online, you can easily see today who's running in your district for next year. People have already pulled. I think we have 5-6 names already of people that are running in Scottsdale.
Okay. But as far as the piece of paper that you get the signatures on, where does that come from?
Yeah, you just print it off, and it's a ballot. And
it just comes from, you just go onto a website, print it off, and you go.
It's on that Maricopa County Superintendent. I think they do a good job.
And then you go out and get hard signatures.
And you get hard signatures, and they have to live in your district. They just have to be registered voters in your district.
Okay. So obviously this is all new to you, but how does, you know, so here's what happens when people go to vote is they usually have, you know, who you want to vote for president, you know, who you want to vote for Senate and Congress and all that stuff. And then it comes down to all these other names, and you're like, and a lot of times it's like by default, people just start checking stuff.
Yeah.
And usually it's whether they have an R or a D next to their name.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, or an I.
Right.
Right. Or whatever that looks like. And so do you have a mentor? Is there somebody saying, hey, Amy, this is how you do? How do you get people, my question is, how do you get people to know you, right? So when election time comes around, we see the ads on TV, you know, so first of all, there's a big fundraising campaign, and then that those funds go into ads on TV, they go to into signs on the side of the street and all that stuff. How mm-hmm. does a school board member get to a point where enough people know you to be elected? Because you're not, I'm assuming you're not raising money on that stuff. You said it's a volunteer position. I suppose you could. I mean, but it's a volunteer position. So what does that look like for you? I mean, what's the plan?
Yeah, good question. We're coming up with a plan as we go. I'm going to get through the holidays here and then, kind of hit it with a plan in January. But the great thing is there are mentors that come out of the woodwork. I'm only here and said I'm running because of mentors, people that had pulled me aside and said, I think you would make a great candidate. I think you would, you know, you would represent my values. Will you run? And for a while, I was like, absolutely not. No, I didn't feel qualified. I don't know what I thought, but I didn't feel qualified to, you know, to be on the school board because I didn't understand it. And then the more people would talk to me and more people would encourage me. And I was trying to find other people to run. Like, well, I'm good at that. I'll find other people that can run.
Sure.
And then I realized, you know what? I think it is me. And I do love our children. I love our schools. I love our community. And I do want to see better leadership. And so if that's me, then I'm willing to give it a go.
Yeah. Can you raise money? I mean, is that...
You have to raise money. And then we've been told that this race in particular is going to be one of the biggest ones in the country.
Okay.
School boards, for whatever reason, right, are big right now. We're hearing about them all over the U.S. And so I think people realize that, you know, our eyes maybe were focused nationally on bigger things and we weren't paying enough attention in our communities. For us in Scottsdale, we let this board president, he walked on to the board unopposed 3 years ago. He was 24 years old. He's a single guy, lives at home with his parents.
Wait. President? Is that?
He is our board president.
So he's the board president, 24 years. We're going to talk about him in a minute, but he's the board president, but I didn't realize this. He's 24 years old.
He's 27
with no kids.
Now.
27, no kids?
No kids and lives at home with his parents.
So what?
So,
We're going to talk about him in a second.
Yeah. Well, so the point, I think the point of it doesn't really, you know, matter necessarily him, but the point is we weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
We didn't have people stepping up to run because we're busy, right? We want someone else to do it. And so we had no one running. We had two people that got on the ballot for 3 years ago unopposed. And then that's where problems have become because, he saw that as a political stepping stone for him.
Okay.
And it's not gone well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so,
Okay. So, and you've probably already answered this, but it's a different question, but I think you've kind of answered it. What would your goals and focus be? I mean, so you say, okay, you're going to run, you want to get your name out there, you're going to put out a message. What is that message? What's the Amy Carney message to get your name out there and get people to make sure that they know you when that vote comes around and they're not just checking a random name to check, which is the last thing you want, mm-hmm. right? In your situation, the last thing you want is, oh, we'll just check the top person and you're number two on the, right? I mean, you have to get your name out there. So what do you want people to know about you when it's time to check that box?
Yeah. Well, I'm working on trying to educate parents. I mean, that's kind of why I'm here today, right? Is because you can read something in a newspaper or you can read something, but I'm actually trying to be in the community educating people on why I'm running, what I'm seeing in the schools, what I would like to see differently. I'm a students first. I think that we need to put the focus back on students and their education. We want them strong in reading, writing, arithmetic. You know, why are we not doing this, teaching kids about money skills, just, you know, strengthening them in all areas that are important and that what parents want from school. So I'm not sure my exact message yet. I don't have a marketing firm and all that. But I mean, I am a champion of kids, of children. I mean, like I said, I've had six go through this school district. I'm a champion of public schools. I am a champion of school choice as well. I think our public schools need to be a good choice for families in the community. And I wrote an article a few years back, I was writing for Raising Arizona Kids, and I wrote an article on six different families who are friends of mine that we all made different school choices for our family, and ours is public school. And in there, I talk about, I think our community schools are important. It's great. My kids can walk to school. Their friends are in the neighborhood. I mean, there's so many great things about it, but there's a lot of things we're seeing come in that aren't so great about it as well.
So let's talk about... Let's just talk about national news for a second.
Okay.
Talk about some of the things that are out there. And I'm not I told you beforehand, I'm not exactly sure. I know a little bit of what kind of went down in Scottsdale in terms of what made national news. But let's just talk about what's out there right now. So obviously coming out of COVID, you know, I think there's a lot of frustration from parents around COVID, right? So you have, so for example, my daughter goes to a Scottsdale school, but it's part of the Paradise Valley School District, right? So they're still wearing masks in school. Which, you know, and when I go into her, I'm not going to say it. So anyway, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, right. But it's like, how well are we even administering that? It is a good question. So anyway, still wearing masks in school, not outside like they were last year, mm-hmm. Even after the science came down and said, okay, you know, I mean, we're following the science. But even after it was like, okay, masks aren't really that effective outside. My child, you know, 90 degrees outside, still running around wearing a mask out of school. Very frustrating. Yeah. So the fact that we're still wearing masks. Last year, you know, the Scottsdale School District. So my daughter goes to a school about a mile up the road from another Scottsdale school. I was dropping my son off at preschool, driving by a mile down the road, a Scottsdale school that's in session as my daughter is still, I'm driving her to the YMCA because it's the only place I can find. She was going to gymnastics for a while and they were supporting learning there. Mm-hmm. So we took her there for a while. Then they stopped doing it. So I'm taking her to the YMCA now where they're supporting learning. I'm thinking, okay, teachers aren't there, but I have these people at the YMCA helping my child learn. This is crazy. All while driving by a Scottsdale school where there's a line of cars dropping their kids off at school. And I was so frustrated. I'm like, tell me why these schools a mile apart have completely different policies. And meanwhile, it's a burden on us. We're both business owners, mm-hmm. right? And so huge burden on us to try to make all of this work, additional money out. But aside from the money, it's just like, what's going on here? The other thing that we found out this year around COVID, so the kindergarten teachers were, you know, kinder teachers were saying they're on track. Everything's good. So we go this year, and I'm going to go on my rant for a second.
You are.
I'm going to go on my rant for a second. We're going to talk about more of this stuff nationally, too. But this is just around COVID and what's happening locally, right? So we go to a few weeks back, we go visit the first grade teachers. Now, we found at the beginning of the year, she's way behind in reading. And my daughter's smart, and she wants to learn. She wants to do it. We just didn't know. Nobody told us mm-hmm. that, hey, over the summer, she's a little behind here. We were told she's on track, and all these kids are on track. So a few weeks ago, we visit the first grade teachers, and they say, yeah, they did not come in on track. Right. So we could have been doing stuff over the summer to get her ready for first grade, but we weren't informed of that. And I'm like, well, why would the teachers tell us that? It wasn't their fault that at the end of the day, it wasn't their fault the schools were closed. So why not just be honest and say, no, they're not necessarily on track. We're doing our best. It's a good school. It's not, you know, it's not like, and then at least we know. So anyway, a lot of frustration around that. Now you're hearing, so nationally, we're starting to hear kids need to be immunized. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's to go to school, but I mean, to go to restaurants and stuff. It's like, okay, there's certain states requiring immunization. So that's just the COVID stuff. Then we have CRT or critical race theory. We're mm-hmm. going to talk about that in a second. So that's obviously, you know, Virginia kind of being ground zero for a lot of this stuff. We've seen, which I think is good. I think a lot of eyes opened up with some of the comments that were made by one of the gubernatorial candidates mm-hmm. out there that really opened the eyes of the nation, I think. And people started to go, wait a minute, now we see a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Hopefully we start to see all the other problems, but just in the schools, I think that actually lost him the race. So anyway, CRT, we'll talk about in a second. And then you have things like, what else? So the gender, right? Some of the gender stuff. So sharing bathrooms, another problem in Virginia. And again, I'm saying all this stuff because I think there's a lot of people that don't actually realize what's happening. So that's why I'm kind of saying some of this stuff, and I don't know what's happening here. So I'm going to, that's what we're going to talk about in a second, is what are we seeing in Arizona? But a child being raped by a boy wearing a skirt that was apparently transgender or claiming to be transgender. And I was like, well, what did we think was going to happen when we started sharing bathrooms with boys and girls, right? And denying that there's denying that there's two genders and trying to act as if there's other. That's an, you know, then you have kids being suspended from school because they're saying, no, there's two genders. And like, oh no, you can't play on the football team anymore because he's telling the truth. I mean, that's, I'm sorry, but that's what's happening. And I'm going to say, I'm not going to make you say all this. And then the last thing that I see, and again, I just want to know, like, locally, if any of this is an issue, right? And the last thing is the idea of equity. So what I've also seen, and I don't think this is as predominant, or at least not out in the public eye, but I've heard it, where now this idea of equity means that we have to cancel honor programs and pull these kids that are advancing or a little bit more advanced back into the general population. So we now can't let kids advance at their pace. We have to slow them down to everybody else's pace if they're advanced. These are the things that I see on a national scale that concern me, right? And like I said, you know, my wife is like, hey, you know, this doesn't affect us. Right. I mean, she told me that. She said, look, you know, why are you worried about these things? Why do you even think, give these things any thought? They don't affect us here. So with all of that, when things that are going on, and maybe I'm missing some stuff, but that's kind of what I've seen. So with all of that, obviously, you know, you've been in the national spotlight as of a few weeks ago. I've saw you in a lot of different places in the national spotlight. What's happening here? What do we need to know here in Arizona? Well, first of all, there was. Before we talk about that, let's talk about why you were in the news. What actually happened here in Scottsdale? Kind of take us through the whole process of what happened, and then we'll talk about kind of where we're at now.
Okay, wow. I think you should be running for school board.
I know.
Well, let's take it back a little bit. I mean, you know, when we're seeing things in national news, I think that gets us nervous, right, in our backyard, and for good reason. But I think we need to slow down, right? And if something's happening in Virginia, why wouldn't it be happening in Arizona? You know, like we need to be skeptical, but we also need to jump to conclusions and everything. So what started happening is, like you said, during COVID, we really started seeing why is this school a mile down the road doing things differently than we are? And this is where the divide started coming in, I think, is because we started seeing with our own eyes, this doesn't make sense, because how can this school be doing that and the school down the road be doing that? But yet, you know, and we're still seeing that today. I mean, Scottsdale Unified is same, has a mask mandate. But yet on October break, my 10-year-old can go to the city of Scottsdale camp down the road where no masks are required. He can be on the Scottsdale Unified school bus for field trips in no mask. And you know, at school, they have to wear masks on the bus and school. So now my 10-year-old is questioning, what is this, right? And why are we doing this? And so it's not just the parents questioning. The kids now are learning, they're learning values we don't want them to. They're learning manipulation, and they're learning lying and coercion and on their own, just by watching the adults make different choices that don't make sense. And when a 10-year-old even can see it, this is not good. So, what are we talking about here? What happened?
What was the controversy about in Scottsdale? And that was all great. What was the actual controversy about in Scottsdale? Kind of taking us through the process, because obviously something happened where, well, you tell us. So what kind of the whole process from the time that parents started to push back to kind of the final incident that led to the national news a few weeks ago?
Okay. So I'll back up and probably tell stories that's never even been told. So there was a group of us that started Arizona Women of Action, and I was kind of on the education team. I mean, we're talking friends, 8 women during COVID that we would text, like, this doesn't make sense, what's going on in your area, type of thing. And then we started meeting in homes, and then we started realizing that a few of them wanted to do a rally at the school board meeting about the mask mandates and curriculum that was being adopted into the school without any transparency. It was just kind of all of a sudden appearing, and now it's too late. Oh, it's too late for parents to be involved. It's been adopted, which is really my heart, is the curriculum part. That's really where my interest lies. But I'm not a big rallier person. That's just not who I am. But these girls were like, Amy, we need to do this. And I'm like, okay. So hundreds of parents showed up at this school board meeting because they are frustrated. They, I don't know. And it went south. Like, it, you know, we had hundreds of people there and people didn't want to wear masks. And so anyway, they shut the meeting down. And from then on, it's been difficult.
So at this point, though, it's just around inconsistencies with COVID. Masks, shutdowns. Is that pretty much
what it was? Yes. And you know what? Okay. And parents want choice. You know, no matter, parents want to be in charge of their child's education. I mean, not in charge of it, but you know,
they want to be involved
and yeah. They want to know what's going on. They want choice when it comes to their child's health decisions. And so that's where we're running into trouble, is when we're not giving choice to the parents to make decisions for their child based on their family and their needs and their values. Then this is why we're having problems.
Yeah. And so choice, to me, what I think of when I hear that is lack of transparency, right? I mean, you can't have a choice if there's no transparency, if you don't even know what your choices are. And that's kind of what we're seeing as well with certain things, yeah?
I mean, yeah, I think it's just been frustrating because parents are not feeling like they're in partnership anymore right now, that they're feeling like they're more of a problem and that their voices don't matter and that, you know, how they feel about masks or vaccine, whatever it is, doesn't matter. And it's frustrating for people. And I can understand that frustration. I mean, and they need to be able to understand that frustration. And why is it different in Scottsdale than Chandler, Mesa, Peoria? None of them have these mandates, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for example, this is going last week, I have a son in eighth grade who's in special education, and his school was getting School of the Year award. And I adore his principal and his teacher and all that. So I had emailed, hey, could I come and take a photo? I'd like to show good things going on in the community, too. There's so much negative right now.
Yeah,
so I was like, can I come take a picture of him and you with the award as something to promote? And I was told no because of COVID. So this is where the animosity comes in, right? Like, now I'm not allowed to come on my son's campus to take a photo. I don't know, you know, but I have respect for him and I have respect for the teacher. So I just go away quietly.
Yeah.
And he took the photo and he sent it to me. But this is what happens, is animosity builds up, right?
Yeah.
Because then you're like, well, I'm the parent and I see the photo and like the superintendent's in the photo and the, you know, so it's like, I don't have the title of an employee of Scottsdale Unified. I just have the title of parent. So therefore I'm not allowed to be on the campus. And it's like, why, when Mesa, there's no restrictions. Parents can come and go, you know what I mean? And that's where we're having problems, is because we see the other schools and other districts that are doing things differently that we more align with or that we want for our children and our family. And that's where the problems are coming in.
Okay. So the parents start to get together and say, there's a problem here. So you start to meet in small groups end up at a school board meeting and there's a problem. Now we're like, hey, this is inconsistent. Even our 10-year-olds are starting to notice that the adults are acting like 8-year-olds and you know, whatever. Right.
Right.
And, but I mean, it's because you're starting to notice a problem. Okay. Mm-hmm. So where does it go from there?
Well, then they shut down the meetings because now they claim they're afraid of what parents are going to do to them, or they're afraid. And so we'll fast forward to the next meeting. They went virtual, and that's where you probably see my photo. It's national, and I don't know whoever knew you could take one photo from an event and it's on all the newspapers and stuff from that thing. And so I headed up a press conference. I mean, I'm in media. That's what I can do. I know how to do that. So I held a press conference for the parents to get to the media, out to the media, what we're upset about or what we'd like to see happen differently, and talked about, like I said, my main thing is the transparency.
Yeah.
Why can we just not be truthful about, you know, all of everything?
Yeah.
So that families can make a decision, better decision for their kids when it comes to curriculum, when it comes to mandates, no matter what it is. And that's one of the reasons why I want to run, too, because it's that important to me. that I don't want to, I will never sit up there, you know, on the dais and not, and mandate things that I don't believe in for myself, or to put things on kids or families that, that I don't agree with.
Yeah.
But we see that happening. You know, we see it, the school board, president out and about, people take pictures of him everywhere, and he's never in a mask, you know, but yet he mandates it for the students. So the hypocrisy is frustrating.
Yeah.
And the frustration's building up is what the problem is.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The transparency is interesting. So Paradise Valley has sent out a couple things. The first they sent out, and I didn't see this one. My wife told me, she said, you know, they've sent out an email that says CRT will not be part of the schools, mm-hmm. whatever. So she received that email. I didn't notice that one. I noticed a different one where I guess somehow a book made it into circulation that shouldn't have. Now, again, they sent out an email. Right. And I felt like I was part of the, you know, you feel like you're part of the process because they just said, hey, something happened. We've remedied it, whether it was a rogue teacher or whether it was a mistake. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But whatever happened. And I was like, OK, cool. I've had my issues with kind of the things that you've been talking about with, you know, shutdowns and masks and all that stuff. But at least there's some transparency with some of the other stuff. So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting because I've seen some of those emails come through and I feel like there is some transparency. I hope it's honest transparency, but I trust that they're being honest with that.
I think it goes back to our family. It's just communication, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about communicating with our kids. It's communication's everything, right? We can more easily trust our leaders, whether in our home or in the schools, if they're truthful or they're willing to communicate. But too often the communication is reactive. And that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we got caught. Here's the communication. Oh, we got caught. Here's the communication. That's what we see in our district.
Okay.
Is that they will get by with what they can until we catch them.
Okay.
And so that gets old.
So as far as the president, we've talked about him a couple of times. He's ran at 24, unopposed, no kids. He's in. There's a lot of hypocrisy. Parents feel like there's a lot of hypocrisy happening. And so you show up at school board meetings. They felt so. What was the threat? What did you notice? I mean, did you notice something? What was the? You said that they felt threatened. I think was the word that you used.
Right.
Did you notice anything that they would have felt threatened by? I mean, did they have a valid point that some people did? People get out of hand, or what happened?
People did raise their voices. People raised their voices in frustration. People did yell out. People did yell out. No one moved from their seat. Yeah. No one. But I think that they just weren't prepared for it. They didn't really understand that people were this upset. And, you know, and I'm sitting there and like one of the first people that helped, you know, put this together. And it's so out of my control. Hundreds of people are there that I don't even know that are frustrated. I'm not out there yelling, right? But the person in front of me is upset and I can't control that. So,
of course.
But then to not acknowledge it and, you know, go online and call. And then this is where the divide begins because now the parents are the bad guys. And it's still playing out. A board meeting was last night and the same thing is still playing out. And it's like, this is not what this is. I mean, the parents want to be partners. We absolutely should be partners. This is our child. This is, you know, and so we may not agree on everything. We don't need to agree on everything, but we need to be heard. We need to, and when there's valid points and your community is asking for something, then maybe as a school board member, I hope that will listen to that and take that into consideration and act accordingly to what my community is asking for. You know, there's certain things they take surveys for, and I don't know about in your district yet. You know, they'll survey parents on things that don't matter as much, but why don't you survey how parents feel about this curriculum or how they feel about the mask mandate? But they won't do that because they don't want to know the truth, right? Of how the majority of the community feels. So, it's frustrating times, and I don't like that it's like this. I look forward to hopefully things shifting in a more positive way. It's one of the reasons I want to run. I'm not running out of anger or, you know, animosity. I'm running because I want, parents to have a welcome voice.
Yeah.
And, let's get back to education,
which is what should be expected, right? I mean, just the simple stuff. which is almost the things that you just shouldn't have to say if you're running for school board, is like, hey, let's give the parents a little bit of transparency and let's make sure that we have the highest standard of education. Those are kind of, those should just kind of be the givens.
You would think, but that's not the case.
Yeah. So, okay. So the photo that you were talking about, there were, is there anything else that's happening in Arizona, or is it just the COVID? I mean, cause there were some, you weren't holding a CRT sign, but there were some people around you holding CRT signs.
Right.
Is that part
of the photo? You know,
I know the photo. So is that part of this, or is that just, or was that just something that kind of you said, like people overreacting a little bit to something happening somewhere else?
I don't know if it's overreacting. Like you said, who really understands what critical race theory is, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a newer thing. And what is this? And I think it boils down to this. Every district will tell you, we are not teaching CRT, right? No one's going to say, yes, we're teaching critical race. No one's going to say that. And they may not, they may truly believe that.
And if it's a good thing, and the question is, if it's a good thing, why? Why would you not say it if you really truly believe that that's the right thing to teach, right?
Right. So no one is saying across the board that this is a good thing to teach children. They're saying they're not. Okay, that's fine. So in Scottsdale, what they say they're teaching is culturally relevant teaching. Okay, that's CRT too. CRT, culturally relevant teaching. Okay, what does that mean too? It's so what it boils down to for me and how I view it is any curriculum, any book, any supplemental materials, any materials that are teaching one race to be better than another or lesser than another is just not accepted. I mean, it's simple, right? We don't need to make anyone feel lesser than or better than based on race, on religion, on gender, any of this stuff. But we are seeing it come in, and it's done really well. It's done really well. You will not look in a textbook and see critical race theory, you know, because it's not in the textbooks. But I will give you an example. So right now, currently in Scottsdale Unified, seventh grade, there's a book that the students are reading in certain schools called Ghost Boys. And Ghost Boys is a book, I spoke about it at the last school board meeting, that because parents have come to me upset about it. It's about a 12-year-old black boy that was killed by a white police officer. Okay, that is very divisive right now in these times. And that could be a book maybe for leisure reading if that's what you want to choose from the public library or whatever that is. Why are we taking these narratives and now putting them in the hands of our students? This is the best we have, right? This is the best literature we have for seventh graders? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think we can do better, right? We're giving literature that's good for all students. I absolutely 100% agree with you know, diverse texts, but it's got to be meaningful, diverse texts, right?
Yeah.
Books like that are not helping our kids. They're not helping our community, but it's being done.
Not helping our first responders.
It's not. That's what I got up and said. How do our kids from police families feel reading this? How do our black kids feel reading this in class and having to discuss it? I mean, it's not, to me, that's not acceptable. We can do better than that. We have, you know, great literature. But here's a good thing. We have seen the district working with us to create some committees to review these books or supplemental materials that have been turned in from parents, you know, concerned parents, to start reviewing these things. So I think that progress maybe is being made, but it's still, there's the number one thing I try to tell parents is you've got to be talking to your kids every day. I mean, you just talk to them about, so what did your teacher read today? And what did, you know, and overall, most of the teachers are awesome. They're teaching, you know, wonderful things. And
absolutely.
So I am for teachers. I am for teachers that are partnering, you know, and I have no problems with any teachers my kids have ever had. I mean, that's, you know, but today is a little different. We've got to just be asking our kids and you'll learn things. And then, and you'll learn. And then it's good because if nothing's going on, there's nothing to worry about, right? I mean,
yeah.
But we want to be proactive because too often we're finding things out after, like that. The Ghost Boys was assigned. Now this parent's upset. She's coming to me, you know, and now it's too late because it's the whole seventh grade in this middle school, two middle schools I know for sure are reading it. So now it's like, okay, now we've got to go back and now we've got to have a committee review it and get it out of the schools.
Yeah.
But in the same time, parents get frustrated because, you know, we talk about inclusive and that's one of Scottsdale's goal or values, but yet you have students going in and reading a book that parents are not happy about, but at that age, they don't want to read a different book. They don't want to be pulled out of class, because you can do that. You can say, I want a different book for my child.
Okay.
But that seventh grader.
But you have to actually know that they have it to begin with.
You've got to be aware.
Yeah.
You've got to be aware. And that is a policy. You can always opt your child out of that. But guess what? A seventh grader does not want to be opted out and not be with their peers and be in a room alone with another child reading a different book.
Sure.
So they just say, all right, forget it. And they let their child read it. But then they have animosity because they feel like they're not getting the education that they hope for their child. And these are just small examples of what's going on and what we're seeing. But
yeah.
The good thing is parents are talking. I mean, we never talked about these type of things, you know? And so, and we're talking across districts. I'm in touch with people that are running for most school boards on this side of the valley and some in the west. And we're sharing things that we're finding, sharing curriculums. We're trying to get ahead so we know what questions to be asking of our administration and of the board. And so I think progress is happening, but it's only going to happen if we can have conversation, if we can have honest communication and transparency.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, I think that it's when you talk about critical race theory, I think that it's become this far right, far left thing. but really, you're right. It's never really been defined because there's not that transparency that we talked about earlier, right? Mm-hmm. And but we've heard a lot of parents speak out, and again, Virginia kind of being ground zero. We've heard parents from all different races speak out and criticize this. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Voices get louder, not people being violent, but they're going to be upset. If I'm a black parent and I think my kid's being taught that they're lesser than or oppressed, and you know, it starts to make them think that they can't, that mm-hmm. their back's to the wall. And that's just not, I wouldn't want my child raised that way. And then on the other side, of course, I watched this video one time. It wasn't at that age, but it was a college professor, a white liberal, you know, had to be a liberal. Anyway, forget liberal. But, you know, clearly like a white college professor with two white students on a Zoom call. And he asked them, he said, have you guys oppressed anybody today? And they said, well, no. And he said, well, have you left your house? And they're like, well, yeah. He's like, well, then you've probably oppressed somebody today. I'm like, wow. Like, it blew my mind to watch mm-hmm. that. Now, again, that's at college. And I think we've known for a long time that colleges yep. can be that way. Like, you kind of know that there's certain colleges, and now it seems like it's a lot of them. But anyway, and that just blew my mind to watch that. And I was like, this guy is trying to teach these kids that they're racist without, and they haven't done anything yeah. to his knowledge.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I think you're right. I think it's like, you know, if you listen to somebody on the far right, they're like, well, people are, you know, and if actually, if you listen to what parents are saying, their kids are saying, but you listen to the kind of the far right, they're like, well, you know, you're being taught that there's oppressed and oppressors. And on the other side, they're like, no, it's real history being taught yeah. and people don't want to learn the real yes. truth about history. But the reality is, I don't think anybody really knows. And the problem is the transparency piece to me. It's like, if this was a good thing, if we were really teaching real history, then let's just be transparent about it. Let's get the books out there. And so the question is it just kind of being built into the culture, or is there a textbook, a critical race theory textbook? You know, what is it? I don't know. So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting.
And this is where, so Scottsdale Unified, they adopted a new million dollar English language arts curriculum without really being transparent, right? And then so parents were asking when we found, you know, they announced it at one board meeting, and 2 weeks later they passed it. So we had 2 weeks to like, what is this curriculum, right? And we started diving into it, and we were like, whoa, we don't know. We want more time to look at this. And they were like, sorry, it's good. We've had a committee done. So then you start to say, well, what are they hiding? Why didn't they? And that's the problem right there. I think and it applies in our own homes with our kids, right? Because trust is everything. And when we're not upfront with what we're doing, there's always going to be problems.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
And they create animosity when there maybe is none to be had. But we start questioning Why didn't they want parents involved? Why won't they show me the book? I just asked to look at the middle school curriculum because I'm on the middle school committee now for novels. And I asked to look at the curriculum that the book I'm reviewing is supposed to align with, and they refused to give it to me.
Yeah.
So then it's like, well, why?
Yeah.
If I'm a parent and I'm willing to dive into the curriculum and make sure this book aligns, why? Now I have to say why.
Yeah.
Why won't they let me look at it? And then the good thing and the bad thing is there's a thing called FOIA, and that's a big thing now. And I don't know if you know, it's a Freedom of Information Act.
Okay.
And so we do a lot of FOIAing now to get the information that we need that, you know, that administrators don't willingly give. And it's a lot of work and it's silly, but this is what we have to do to find out what's really going on. So now I can turn around and FOIA the curriculum. But why does it have to be this difficult?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Why does it have to be this difficult?
Yeah. You mentioned school choice earlier, and I don't usually promote my Phoenix Homes and Hotspots videos on this, but if you're watching on YouTube, if you click the top right-hand corner, I did an entire kind of a virtual tour of Scottsdale with all of the schools, all their locations, all of their ratings and all of that kind of stuff. So you can check that out on YouTube if you're watching the YouTube version of this. So let's go back quickly to the present. Are you able to talk about this in terms of, I know that there's – so – So what happens? So what ends up happening? I mean, the national news was for more than just parents showing up at school board meetings, because that's happening all over the country. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening where the national news takes place around this school board president?
Okay, I'll take it back one step further for your listeners and viewers, because a lot of people don't know. So. A few of us moms, we held an education night for parents because we have reviewed the new curriculum, that new curriculum I just told you about. We have seen divisive things and propaganda and ideologies that shouldn't be in our schools. And so we held an education night because, you know, parents say, you know, like you said, your wife's like, this doesn't apply to us. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, come to the event and we'll show you. We'll give you what we see and what we think. And then you get to make your decision.
I like it. That's cool.
Yeah, but the district did not like that, right? They did not.
Well, where did you hold it, though?
We held it at a community center.
What does that have to do? Okay.
Yeah. So thank you. But we ended up having to hire a police officer. It got crazy because we were getting so much pushback from the district. So anyway, it was good. So anyway, we did that, and then the board, we're not sure exactly who, sent a cease and desist letter to one of the moms, a legal cease and desist to her home. Who actually wasn't even involved, but sent it to a mom saying that you are not allowed to use SUSD on anything you do, basically, you know, type thing, because they had trademarked it. So it was like, oh, you got to be kidding me, you know. So I spoke to the media about that cease and desist. And so the board president didn't appreciate that I spoke out about that. And he sent me an email personally. I would call it a personal attack. He was calling me white supremacist and he was calling me anti-Semitic and he was calling.
Wow.
Yeah. I've never even met the man and I've never had a conversation with him. He is.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't know that.
No. Right? I'm just saying, is that the reason he was calling you anti-Semitic?
That's so he went into this whole, raging email to me personally in my inbox, because of what he read in the media, which was talking about, why is the district spending money on sending a legal cease and desist to moms when you could just call us or you could just email and say, hey, we trademarked SUSD, please don't use it. And we'd be like, okay, that's weird, but cool.
Yeah.
I mean, so anyway, they just create a lot of drama. And so that email came into my inbox and it was actually on the day that we adopted our son and I couldn't deal kind of with, I was like, what is this? And I sent it to the people who had the three other moms who had done that education event with me. And I sent it to them and I just was like, help me, please read this for me and let me know if there's something I need to do because I'm kind of upset about this right now. And there was a mom in there mentioned, I don't even know the mom's name anyway. And someone had forwarded it to her. So she actually wrote this amazing email back and it started this whole email chain. Okay. So now it's the superintendent, the board president, another board president, and two moms. And I'm just now kind of reading what's going back and forth. So one of the last emails he sent in this, he was including screenshots trying to show this mom how she's anti-Semitic or racist or whatever he was trying to prove. And I noticed, I'm like, that's weird. He's got a Google Drive. I could see a Google, you know, a website, and I could see folder. And I contacted the mom, who I'd not met before, but I was like, did you see that one screenshot? He's got a folder with your name on it. It says, like, you know, her name and anti-Semitism or something. I don't know. I said, wow. It's weird. I said, it's weird. Well, little did I know that mom went and typed that address into her computer and got into the drive. So, yeah. So because of us moms, she got into the drive and was able to see what they were doing and what they were collecting. And
you have got to be kidding. And that is crazy.
So they were collecting, there's hundreds and hundreds of things in there on nearly 50 different parents, from their mortgage statements to their divorce decrees to their bankruptcies to civil lawsuits to lots of background checks with people's social security numbers, people's pictures of their kids, just super inappropriate. Nothing that an elected official should be compiling. And it turns out it was him and his dad. They're under investigation and all that.
He was removed, correct?
No. Well, he was demoted. So,
oh, he was demoted. I thought he was removed.
No, that would be nice. But he's still on the board. Wow. He still sat up there last night. And it's sad, actually, because, you know, some of the other board members had asked him to resign. This is a big issue right now. It's causing a lot of drama in our district. He's refusing to resign. There's a recall. There has been a recall on him, and it ends on December 18th. So it's just a lot of unnecessary drama. If he would just accept the consequences and move on and let our district begin to heal, but he's not. And it's just causing more problems.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It's a good word for it.
Yeah, and just as a reminder to everybody, especially if you kind of tuned in later, I always take this content and break it down a little bit. So if you didn't hear it, this is a 27-year-old, no kids, kind of has higher political aspirations, so really doesn't have a whole lot of vested interest in the kids to begin with. He's not a parent.
Right.
And here he is running a school board in Scottsdale, and just, wow, that's, yeah. As far as the collecting, and the way that you, I didn't know how you discovered it. I knew what he had done. I was like, how did you even figure this out? That's interesting.
Yeah, that's the thing. I never have the time. I have said it on a couple interviews, I think, but yeah, people don't understand where, and I've never gotten to tell the backstory, which is important of how we got to this place, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he dropped into my inbox, and I'm a researcher too, so it's like being a reporter and stuff. So that's why, like, not much gets past me. So when I saw that screenshot, I wouldn't have thought necessarily to type that in, but I'm glad the other mom did, because all darkness, I feel like, will be brought to light eventually. And
yeah.
And I think that's just the place where we all need to be as parents right now. No matter what schools our kids are in, no matter what ages, we just need to be aware. We don't need to be scared. We don't need to be, you know, on the defense all the time. We just need to be talking to our child.
Yeah.
We need to be in communication with the teacher.
Talking to parents. Talking to other parents is what you all have done.
And there's Facebook groups now for every district. I mean, that's how we've learned about a lot of this is through there. And it gives people a sense of community. And none of us, I don't know why, we don't want division. Like, for me, going on the board, I'm looking to unify people, right? I want our district to be somewhere where, when we moved here, I mean, our realtor was like, you have to move to Scottsdale. It's a top district. We knew we wanted our kids in public school. You know, it's a top district. And I'm not sure now that realtors can say that. And that's sad.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad. But maybe it's realistic. Maybe there's another community that people need to move to that's making better decisions for families.
Or maybe we just need to elect better school board members.
There you go.
So
that's where we're starting. So yeah. That's where we feel we went wrong,
yeah.
And we're reacting now. And okay. That's, so we're going to try and take back two seats with, you know, two people that really care about our schools and our kids and care about education. And We'll see how this all goes.
Yeah. Do you, real quick, it doesn't need to be a long answer, but do you feel like the whole board is kind of like this, or do you think it was just kind of like one bad apple type
situation?
Well, no,
we know that other people were tied to it too.
Okay.
So that's all, it's still unraveling. I mean, this is pretty new.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
This came out just a few weeks ago. So it's all going to still be unraveling. And I don't know how much. We know that one of the other board members had the exact emails that I had. She was on everything. Whether she says she didn't read them, okay, well, maybe she should be reading them. I had actually gone to the police in Paradise Valley after I got that screenshot and the stack of emails, just because I don't feel any elected official should be talking to moms the way that he's talking to. And I've never once emailed him or had a conversation, you know, spoke yeah. to him in any kind of way that would make him do that. So I had actually taken that there and turned him in at that time and just said, I need this on record in case something ever happened or he ever did anything. You have record of him talking, because he would say, he says things like, you know, stop your white supremacist behavior before someone is hurt or worse, killed. And it's like, what?
Who's protecting him? Like, what is the issue with just removing him? Who's actually? I mean, who would it be?
Well, this is the interesting thing, and I think to why it's going a national story, because it's like we don't realize that these people are elected officials, and they were elected, and there's nothing you can do except for recall them, and it's impossible. You know, in Arizona, you need 22,000 signatures to recall
okay.
a school board member, and that's a lot.
Have to be all Scottsdale residents.
They've got to be Scottsdale taxpayers in the district. But okay. 22,000 signatures in 4 months it's never been successful for a reason. They make it really difficult.
So that's the only process to remove him, is what you're saying. So he's not being protected necessarily. It's just it's an uphill battle to do it.
It's an uphill battle, and after this came out, the community has been amazing. They have really rallied, and they're really trying to get this recall through, because if this is the only way, then
so that is in the works. Then
yeah,
that,
December 18th is the last day, though, but it's never been successful. It's really hard. But
yeah.
Everyone,
yeah.
It's been great because I don't care what side you fall on politically or, you know, it doesn't matter. It's brought conversation about, and conversation is always good, right? If we,
yeah, awareness.
Awareness. And we've gotten to meet a lot of people in the community. Even, I say, like, it's pretty cool when, like, our elderly neighbors who haven't had kids in years are as fired up about this now as the parents.
Yeah,
this is a good thing when community's getting involved and understanding what's going on in our schools. Then I look at it as a positive.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously his seat isn't one of the seats coming up next year.
It is.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay.
It is, and he was running again. So okay. I think I think he's pulled that now.
Yeah.
That okay. his seat is one of the, it's the two that walked on unopposed. Which would be for their 4 years will be up in November. So yes, he will be up. So thankfully, that should end.
Yeah.
In November of 22, if not before.
And he's being investigated as far as the hard drive. There's some sort of, is that?
Yes, there's a, but the investigation is being done internally.
Okay.
The school district.
Oh, I thought there was a police investigation.
There is a police investigation as well.
Okay.
So we've not heard any updates on that yet.
Okay. And just for the record, I did reach out to him on LinkedIn just to give him an opportunity to hear his side of the story. But I'm sure if there's a criminal investigation, he's being told to stay really quiet about
yeah.
that and probably wouldn't have responded anyway, or maybe didn't even see the message, giving him the benefit of the doubt. But I did give him an opportunity to tell his side of
yeah.
the story. I told him that you were coming to see me and that he could, you know,
oh, good.
Certainly express his side of the story if he wanted. So, hey, so let's finish with some local stuff, some fun local stuff.
Perfect.
I always like to promote local business like you did
nice.
Earlier with some of the stores that sell your book, which was awesome. So what do you and your family have a favorite local restaurant? Or multiple.
My husband and I.
Yeah.
with that many kids, we don't go out all that often.
Yeah,
but
right.
I would say Andreoli's.
Okay.
Andreoli's Italian Kitchen is our favorite.
Which is where?
Which is at 90th and Via Linda.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, great. Really great. Yeah. Andreoli's, and then Rasconi's is always a good one for us when we got a good date night because it's right up the street from us. And and I just love these. One, you know, this chef-owned
yeah. We have some great chefs in Phoenix.
We do. We've got great restaurants here.
We really do.
Yeah.
And Rasconi's is where?
Tatum and Shea.
Tatum and Shea. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So those are your restaurants. And then how about, is there a local charity that you support?
Yep. So proceeds from my book and everything else is go back to foster care organizations in Arizona. And so Hope in a Future is my main one that I donate to because I have seen what a difference they make in my kids' lives. And what
is that a local? That's a local mm-hmm. charity. Okay. Hope in a Future.
Hope in a Future. Okay. And what I like about them, there's a lot of foster care and foster care organizations that do amazing things. But what Hope in a Future does differently is they're focused on relationship, and that's what these kids need is mentorship. And they let them continue through adoption. So my older still gets to go in their mentorship program. He gets to do things every month. They do things and keep those relationships till he's 18 or whatever it ends. And they're the only ones that I've seen still allow the kids to benefit from their services once they're adopted. Because most of the time it's like, okay, great, you're adopted. Thank you. You know, and it's really helpful for us as a family. And so that's why I just love them, and they're all about life skills training and just bringing up those stronger adults.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you and all the parents in Scottsdale for standing up. It takes a lot. It's, you know, I've told my wife that I'm probably one of those parents that should be down at school board meetings and more active. And although, you know, there's times where it's probably not wouldn't be a good thing for me to be down there, but hopefully I kind of trust right now what's happening in Paradise Valley until I see otherwise. And mm-hmm. so far, you know, like I said earlier, they've done some of the right things, but kudos to you and all those parents that have stood up and that are making a difference, because I think you're right. I think the two things that are important is number one, the kids and their education. And number two is making sure that the parents are comfortable with what's happening, especially kind of with some of the things that we're hearing. So thank you, Amy Carney, for coming in, taking the time. And again, just as a reminder on the book, your website one more time?
It's just my name, Amy Carney, Carney, amycarney.com.
Awesome. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
If you enjoyed this show, remember to subscribe if you haven't already and share this interview. You never know when you might change a life. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, you can watch this full podcast episode in our Interviews with Arizonans YouTube channel and engage by liking, sharing, asking questions, and commenting on this or any other interview on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Interviews with Arizonans. Remember, keep asking questions until you get the real answers. We'll see you next time.